So I got the recording all going. Okay, I'll call this study session to order at 5:33 or so concerning the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan, and we'll go over the history of the recent amendments to the master plan, and I will turn this over to Mr. Michael Jones, our city manager, to go over this history for us.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, council members. I also probably rely on Stacy Pratcher a little bit for this. Actually, I would rely on her almost entirely for this, except when this occurred, I was the community development director, so have a significant background in it and a lot more of the institutional knowledge to be able to explain this. So first off, I did want to point something out. On page 8, there's a typo that can be a bit confusing. At the end there, it's not the very end, but towards the end of the last line of the second paragraph, in bold, right in the middle, it says figure 3, should be attachment 3. So figure should be attachment 3. And we did kind of slam to get this out and in your packet. It could be much longer. There could be a lot more detail. In fact, to recreate what happened 5 years ago in a series of many public meetings and a series of meetings leading up to it and various other things, it could be a volume. It could be volumes of information. We didn't think that was practical or appropriate. We just wanted to provide you with a short summary background and an opportunity to get the information and ask questions as you may have them. So the memo is really just kind of gives an overview of what occurred, and I'm happy to answer questions as we go along. First off, just kind of a refresher on the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan, or the Resort Semiahmoo Master Development Plan, which is there on the title, the RSMP, as we refer to it in the memo. It was adopted in 1985, and there were some amendments along the way, but primarily other than an amendment that happened right in the beginning, it wasn't amended again until 2014. It did, however, and then it was amended in 2016 as part of this. And one of the important things about the master plan is that when it was adopted, it was presented by the proponent, which was essentially the Trillium Corporation, as a proposal to the city for the development of a master plan community. And it was approved and accepted by the city in conjunction with approving the PUD, the Planned Unit Development, for the SPIT with the Boundary Ridge subdivision. And some interpretations of that was that it was also a PUD for all of Semiahmoo. It was a kind of an overview planned unit development for all of Semiahmoo, but it lacks detail to meet those requirements today for most of the areas. It doesn't have enough level of detail. But in any case, in 1985, it laid out the overall plan for the development of Semiahmoo. It approved a specific planned unit development for Semiahmoo SPIT, just the tip of the SPIT, because the rest of it is owned by the park and it was just going to be park. And the Boundary Ridge subdivision, which is where Great Blue Heron Lane is, that area on the bluffs overlooking Semiahmoo Bay. So the rest of the subdivisions that came in later, and there are many of them, though, and condo projects that may not be in single family home subdivisions, but Clubhouse Point or something Villas, which the name eludes me at the moment, that's also by the golf course, by the clubhouse. Those were all individually approved later as planned unit developments within the master plan context. Each of those, as they were approved, generally departed from the master plan. So there's variation. If you look at the master plan, if you, for example, look at this page here, and that's not actually the one I was thinking it was, but if you look at the land use plan for the the master plan, which looks very much like this. It talks about a certain number of density in units in one location, single-family units. It talks about a certain amount of density of multifamily in another location. Each of the projects that was developed fits within the context of that plan, and the road pattern generally fits within the context of that plan. But if you were to overlay the actual land use versus the plan developed in 1985, there's quite a bit of variation, because each time the project came forward, it was developed with more information, greater detail, because they knew more about topography, for example, more information related to the market at that time, more information or better posturing in the marketing based on what had been built before. So if, like, recently mostly multifamily had been built, then you were more likely to get single family in the next project, or vice versa. So there was kind of this evolution, but it generally fits the pattern. It is generally less dense than the improved pattern in almost all instances. And that's because the way the master plan is written, and if you read through it, you would find that in places that are multifamily, you're allowed to build single family. The density is generally given to you in a range. So it might be 6 to 14 units per acre. So you build at 6, you're on the low end of that. So overall, it generally has become less dense than was originally expected. It varies somewhat in where you'll find the multifamily clusters, just a little bit, and it varies in the road pattern a little bit. But more or less, if you overlay the actual land use, like an aerial photo of a city in this map, they're pretty similar. They more or less are compatible, with a couple of key variations. One of those is in the Sea Smoke location. There was supposed to be a 400-space parking lot. And you may remember, some of you were here when we went through that process, and it was not wanted, it was not needed. It was generally, back in the day, when one person or one company owned all of this land, the concept was those 400 parking spaces would be built to support uses on the spit. Parking for the marina, parking for the hotel, parking for more density on the spit, and there'd be a shuttle bus that would run back and forth to bring people down there. All of those uses, as they've developed, for the most part, have had to provide their parking. No shuttle bus ever came into existence. 25, 30 years has passed. The Declarant Trillium is no longer in place, and the owners of those properties are different entities. So when Sea Smoke came through, it was one. It's actually a fairly good example of what I'll explain in a minute, is what was in the plan, what was appropriate in our context at this time, and what was needed were different. Therefore, what was approved was different than in the plan. And it shows that when you have 30, 35 years of time pass, there's a need for variation, or you get locked into building something that isn't appropriate or isn't needed. So in any case, this is what the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan uplands area, this is zoomed in on every page, so there's no point really in showing that, because mostly we're talking about the uplands anyway. This is what the uplands area looked like at the time that the city adopted the plan or approved it in 1985. If you look on this image, and I'm gonna walk over the computer for a second, but if you look on this image, this area right here, this square, is not in this image. That square would be right there on this side, right? Okay, that's kind of important in understanding the context of all of what we're talking about, because the city annexed this area after the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan was approved. So this general land use pattern was approved up here, and then the city added this chunk of land. The land use pattern here doesn't take into account that this would ever be part of the city. Except for one road that dead ends right there, there really isn't access into the site. You can see these are cul-de-sac neighborhoods that don't provide access going in. And so this area kind of is a little bit landlocked, which became a bit of a problem later. That was addressed by the developers through the inclusion of this planned unit development, the adoption of this planned unit development, which went through a review process by both the city and the county. This is the West Semyama PUD, and the square that I just highlighted is the top part of this planned unit development. The curve in the road, the big sweeping curve, is Semyama Parkway, is that kind of more or less the boundary of that square that I just highlighted. So several years later, after the annexation, the developers proposed this land use plan. At that time, the urban growth area for the city was quite a bit larger than it is today. In 2009, the Whatcom County Council, as a result of finding that there was excessive land area allocated for urban development in the county, reevaluated UGAs countywide, and they reduced our UGA substantially, in part because things like this had not developed, so the pace of development was not as high as it was anticipated to be. So we lost the UGA. That's important because it affects both this and the next slide that I'm going to show you. But I wanted to show you, it's not real bright, but the red line that came up there is the city limits today. Cuts right through the middle of the West Semyama PUD. You see that there? That's significant because everything to the lower left of that line can't be built, can't be approved under the existing land use laws in Whatcom County. It can't be annexed by the city, it can't be developed. A planned unit development, when it got in, the planned unit development was approved in Whatcom County, and it was approved in the city of Lane. It was approved in the city of Lane as an amendment to the Resort Semyama Master Plan, which meant it went into a planning document as a land use overlay or zoning allowance, an entitlement. That doesn't expire because it was a plan amendment, right? The plan was changed. It didn't have a timeline. In Whatcom County, a planned unit development expires. They don't have the Resort Semyama Master Plan, so they didn't adopt it that way. They did it as an entitlement, much like Grandis Pond or East Maple Ridge, and you know that we've come back with requests to extend those that the applicants have proposed because their timeline is running out. They're going to expire. The expiration of these projects, West Semyama and Cannery Hill, happened in Whatcom County. So you have also this Cannery Hill project, which is quite large. That was the city limits originally. This was the city limits originally in 1992. This was the city limits later down below. It correlates with what I just showed you on Cannery Hill, on the West Semyama project, which sits below and to the right, kind of where the lower legend is. It's actually a table that talks about land use area. That's where that other project would sit. This one falls almost entirely out of the city limits. It was also approved as a plan amendment, so it became a non-ending or non-expiring allowance to develop the land in that pattern in the city. In fact, it wasn't just an allowance, it was the direction of this is how you're supposed to build within the context of the Semyama Master Plan, which has some flexibility as I described. This is how you have to build. So people would, but also that the area was outside the city's UGA because of the changes in Whatcom County. So now we had a situation where, this slide shows it'll fall kind of together, where you had two large planned developments, partially in and partially outside the city. People would come to the planning counter and say, we're interested in this property inside the city limits. What can we do with this property? And we would explain to them something like this master plan. Say, this is what's in our code, this is what's in our master plan, this is what's in our comprehensive plan, this is your land use sort of direction for this area, but you can't build it because you can't get any of that stuff outside the city limits approved. It's not an option. This kind of came to a head with a project called Muirfield, which was located right about here. Because the Muirfield project, basically, if you look at the old plan, is a boulevard, a really wide entrance lane into a very large community called Cannery Hill. but that would be a road to nowhere. It would literally be this big boulevard that went to the city limits and dead-ended. That's what the plan calls for. So we tell people that's what the plan calls for, then they come in and they want to apply for a project, and we're like, well, you're gonna need to go through a process where we explain and you explain that you don't want to build a big boulevard that goes to nowhere, and that doesn't really make any sense in any kind of a process. And you'll need to, we'll have to go through the planning process, evaluate findings, and discuss why it's acceptable to do something that departs from that. And we did that with the Muirfield project.
Okay, we only have 13 minutes. We need to really summarize as quickly as we can here and allow for some questions.
Sorry. So when we went through this process, I'm getting into much more detail than I intended to, I apologize. So the Muirfield project, the groundwork is important though. The Muirfield project kind of brought it to a head because the Planning Commission, reviewing this project, said this is an untenable situation. This is kind of ridiculous that all the guidance is to do something that makes absolutely no sense. And they recommended approval of Muirfield in a different pattern, which was a cluster of, I think it's 10 single family homes on a cul-de-sac with a private drive. That was presented to the City Council, and the City Council accepted their findings and approved the project. And then the Planning Commission said, can you please do something about this? And we said, sure, we can prepare a application for your consideration to eliminate the Cannery Hill and eliminate the West Semiahmoo planned unit developments from the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan. The Planning Commission said, please do that. Staff presented that to the Planning Commission in a public hearing, public meeting, I should say. They accepted it, and then it became one of the things that we were going to work on. But in order to be able to work on it as staff, as a comprehensive plan amendment, it has to be included in the docket each year at the beginning of the year, and then there's an opportunity mid-year to add things. But typically, each year at the beginning of the year, we, as the planning department, would bring forward to you a docket of items to work on as comprehensive plan amendments. And you as council can say, yes, please do work on those, or no, that one we're not interested in at all, don't even waste your time on. And council, of course, can add things as well. Council docketed that in a public meeting here in the spring and said, go ahead and work on that change. During that process, we presented to the Planning Commission, to the public and others, the idea of removing all the area highlighted in red from the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan. So a number of things were considered at that time. One was just leave them in, deny the comprehensive plan amendment, leave those plans in place. That was one thing that was considered, but it was quickly rejected. The other was to revert to the original Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan, which was that original slide that I showed you, but that had that fundamental problem of the big square area that was not planned and didn't have roads going into it and wasn't integrated into the future development. The other was to remove everything, including the area north of the fire station, which would have included the sea smoke site, and everyone decided, no, the fire station seems to be a logical breaking point. Let's leave that in and deal with it as it comes. Ironically, it came right away. This is one of the soonest things. And others were to master plan this entire area. That was another thing that came forward. So everything you see in red would be master planned. Again, we reached out to various property owners and didn't get interest from them in master planning. I would say that it would be foolish for the city to go through that master planning process without the property owner's involvement, because if they don't want to head in that direction, they'll ultimately come in with a proposal to do something different, and all the money and time that was spent would be wasted. And it would be a significant expense. If the city were to just go and do this, it would likely cost us $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 at a minimum because of the engineering and analysis of things that would be required to master plan a large neighborhood, particularly without the property owner's participation. So the master planning effort didn't move forward. The Planning Commission recommended removing all of this area that's highlighted in red from the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan, and that was forwarded to council. So you might ask, what kind of involvement was there during that process? When we started the process, staff met with the Semiahmoo Resort Association staff, folks like Sandy Bomason and Rob Block. Neither of them work there anymore, I don't think. Debbie Smith, the executive director, kind of the key folks there at SRA that are paid staff, and explained the process, what we were doing, what we were working on, where it would likely head, what some of the things would be that would be evaluated. I presented to the SRA board, couldn't tell you the dates without extensive research, but I presented to the SRA board and said, this is the stuff that we're working on. Ultimately, the Semiahmoo Resort Association assigned a subcommittee, two folks from the Architectural Standards Committee, one person from the SRA board, and Debbie Smith, to work with me as the city staff person on this project overall. Primarily, that was focused on code amendments that would accompany this change so that there would be development standards for this area that were different than our regular development standards. Things that would take into account curvilinear streets, not having alleys, different street lights, some of the details that make Semiahmoo different than like a gridded neighborhood here in downtown Blaine. And we had multiple meetings over time, and there were minutes and emails and things went back and forth. And they were quite included in that process. Eventually, and you'll see the last thing in this whole packet is attachment 3, wherein they said, with this one change from include these 10 things to these 12 things, which are from their CC&Rs, we support this change. We support this modification. And that was essentially, from my perspective, SRA's, if you will, approval, although they don't need to approve it, their acceptance of the changes that were made. So that's kind of how we got to where we were. Now, of course, people today don't remember all of that interaction, or there are folks today who were not on the board at that time and may not be aware of that. And I'm sure that some people didn't know all of the things that were happening or be able to keep track of all the things that were happening, because it's complicated stuff, and it's, you know, it's happening over here with people who work on it day in, day out. It's not everyone out in the public's regular day in, day out work life or things that they have to be involved in regularly. That's the process of where we got. Sorry that I didn't allow more time, and I'm sorry I probably gave too much detail, but any questions for me?
Okay, I have here figure 2 from the SOAR CPA 1-14 Planning Commission 9-25-14, page 2 of 6. And when you look at your figure 6, there is a triangle right at north, whatever that direction is, that was never part of Cannery Hill and never part of West Blaine. And yet that is what we now know as Woodbury.
That's right.
And it was never part of those two pieces, which were removed, and somehow it got removed. And the rationale or the discussion for that is really, really muddy, because nobody remembers. There was no discussion with anybody. Debbie Smith has an absolute memory for everything that occurred at Semiahmoo Resort. She has no recollection of any discussion of that little piece of property ever being agreed. And just to come back to this, the 12 items for design standards, Michael Coulthard's letter, and in discussing this with Michael Coulthard, he said absolutely, at a bare minimum, if any development is going to happen in that red area, it must apply to these 12 standards which you have included in this package. How then did Woodbury present 8 of 12 standards and get approved by the Planning Commission?
So I won't speak to Woodbury, and I also won't speak to what people remember, but I can tell you what I remember, respectfully, that there was extensive discussion about this. It was clearly laid out, and the image that you're talking about are these two images right here, if I'm not mistaken, one that shows Cannery Hill and West Semiyama District, and the other that shows the subject area. Those both came out of planning commission packets, planning commission presentations, and presentations given to the city council when this was approved. So it was discussed, it was laid out, and as I mentioned, there were various things that were proposed, various things considered. The one that was considered to be most appropriate was to remove the master planning from everything on the west side of the parkway rather than leave an orphan parcel. So that's how that happened. And it was through an open public process that that's the area that was bounded by the change. And maybe Stacy can address the Woodbury item later, or even now if you can do it.
Yeah, I've got a minute, Stacy.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I'll be quick. Thank you, Madam Mayor, Council members. As it refers to the Woodbury application, the project proponents for Woodbury have requested variances from some of those, the 12 requirements. The Planning Commission recommended approval of 3 of the variances that they had submitted, and then that was adopted.
Any other questions from council? I think this kind of speaks to the city being trying to be flexible, parcel by parcel to a degree, after going through process of what might make sense according to each individual parcel. And that's kind of where this comes through, where there are some variances allowed. We get criticized a lot of the city of not allowing variances when we should. And sometimes we get criticized when we allow them as well. So.
I think it's also important to point out, Madam Mayor, that this is a land, this is a planning action. This isn't the Woodbury development proposal. That's something that came later. This is a process that we went through to address a fundamental problem with the planning that had already been approved and became sort of null and void in a sense due to the reduction in the UGA. So the property that is Woodbury could have been proposed basically just the way that it was proposed, even if this hadn't happened. Because if you look at the original illustration here, in that location, there's an entrance road and a cul-de-sac that goes in and branches out. Woodbury is a pattern with an entrance road and cul-de-sacs that go in and branch out. And if I remember correctly, that property is allowed in this original master plan for single-family residential development. And Woodbury is single-family residential development. So while people are unhappy with, some people are unhappy with what was approved there, it's actually quite consistent with what was in the original plan, even though it doesn't apply today. But we really didn't, this is not intended to explain Woodbury. That's a land use action that's entirely separate from this. This is why the master plan got amended to address these two large planned unit developments that stood in the way of any kind of realistic development. And that is how we got to the decision by council to remove that area from the master plan. Mm-hmm.
Charlie.
You and I were on council with all the residents. Have you had any conflict or discussion or concerns about this from the ready happen? You don't.
I don't really recall it either, but I do respect the homeowners in this area wanting to just simply know why and how this occurred. So, Mr. City Manager, if you could just, in just a few sentences, kind of just compact an answer as to why and how. That seems to be a big question with the homeowners out there, and I respect that, and I'd like to hear it myself. I know it has to do with the UGA, the reduced UGA, and the city's inability to annex the properties. that has a big bearing on this, whether that's the only bearing. So can you just kind of succinct this down to an answer for them, if you can?
Probably not.
Okay.
But I'm willing to try.
All right, try.
The fundamental issue is, there are two fundamental issues that caused the initial action by the Planning Commission and the request to council to docket this proposal and allow the change to be considered. And those are that there are approximately 80 acres that were inside the city limits that were not included in the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan. So there was a large chunk of property that didn't have direction. And in fact, the way the master plan was laid out, barriers to getting access, roads, sewer, things like that, into that property. Mm-hmm. That's the difference between the original master plan, which had the earlier city limits, and the later city limits after the annexation. That wasn't such a problem with the West Semiahmoo project being in place, because that addressed it. But once the county reduced the UGA and made the West Semiahmoo project impossible and made the Cannery Hill project impossible, we had a different problem, which was that we had these large master plan developments that called for things like a 10-hole golf course in the city limits. And the other 8 holes were gonna be out in the county, but they couldn't be developed. That was West Semiahmoo. Cannery Hill, like I mentioned, Muirfield, great example. What Muirfield was supposed to be was this great big boulevarded entrance into a huge neighborhood of many, many homes. Well, when you can't build any of those homes, why would you build this large boulevarded entrance? So there were those two fundamental problems that we didn't have planning in place to address. And Cannery Hill and West Semiahmoo needed to be removed from the Resort Semiahmoo Master Plan if we could have a logical discussion with people at the counter when they came in and asked about their land. And if Planning Commission and Council could have reasonable decision making that was not very widely varied from the plan that was in place. That's what triggered the request to consider a change by the Planning Commission. At the time, Council thought, yes, that makes sense. We need to address this problem. So they authorized us to do that. We did that, and in that process, looked at a variety of different alternatives. One alternative was remove the master planning from everything on the west side of the parkway, but adopt municipal code to guide the direction of that area, require a planned unit development to give it detailed review, and move forward. And that's what council approved.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, well, we are out of time, past time. I hope this answers some of the questions. If there are any questions of the audience, could you please direct them, if not to city council, to the city manager, specific questions, and we will try to address this and decide from this point forward if anything, you know, needs to be done past this point.
I'd be happy to answer questions offline.
Offline?
Yeah.
Okay. So, in the interest of time, if you can address your questions to the city manager, he was the planning development director at that point, and he should be able to answer your questions very clearly.
Mr. Jones, there was a site-specific request for an amended comprehensive plan in March of 2013. Did you follow up with another one of these when you added Woodbury project?
So we're gonna do this offline, right? I mean, we're gonna start the city council.
If you can answer very simply.
No, I can't. I don't know what he's holding there.
Okay.
Was there, when Woodbury was added to the project, was there another process to go through where you prepared a similar document to the site project request?
Okay, he will answer you offline.
Yeah.
We'll make sure you get an answer.
All right. Well,
thank you.
I get there's violation of city code here.
No, I don't believe so, but we will answer this offline. We will make sure we answer you fully, but we need to, in the interest of time, we need to.
Madam Mayor,
this work session is closed. I'm sorry.
I think it's incumbent on you to know where this process violated the Plain City Code.
Okay.
And that's the reason I'm asking if there was another.
Okay, request. I understand.
Plain City Code talked about site-specific amendments to the comprehensive plan.
Okay.
The code says that when you make a site-specific request, you have to identify the site. And then you have to send out certain notices. This site was changed in September of 2014. As far as I can tell, based on his documents, with no notice of the change.
Okay, we'll make sure the city manager, he's listening, and he will answer the question.
This is an issue for the city council if you violated the city code.
This is closed. Work session is.